Hey everybody, welcome back to the Nidus Anarchy series. I'm your host, Adam, the CIO of Nidus, and today we're going to be doing our first interview and with none other than Ted Balfour, the CEO of Nidus. Ted, welcome to the Nidus Anarchy series. I know you've been super excited to get on here and show everyone your face and tell everyone how awesome you are and show everyone how sexy you are, so now is your opportunity.
Absolutely, you've been hogging the spotlight, Adam. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So today, I figured what we'd do, just to kind of start things off, is just kind of talk about our background, and not in the, like, the boring kind of, oh, hey, what have you done? Oh, here's my resume, basically, that we do when you ever go on any type of a sales pitch, right? No, this is more just like a real world. If we're sitting in a bar, let's talk about some crazy shit as how we all started out in this industry, where we all came from. So that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to have Ted start first. This should be fun. So Ted, tell me a bit about how you kind of started in identity access management and just consulting in general.
So I was working for a large pharmacy benefit manager out of New Jersey, and I was given a project. Basically, they said, we've got a directory, you know, make it do something, right? So they put in this LDAP. It was really cool, but they didn't know what to do with it. So we started analyzing the current state process of onboarding and found out that it generally took 3 weeks and people got lost in the process. You know, somebody would come on board about a month later, they'd get a laptop, they'd get their access. It was a pretty bad situation. So we started evaluating the market and looking at tools and workflow tools initially. Then I stumbled upon a couple different companies, BMC, Access 360. These are some old names. So we ended up purchasing. Basically, what I did is I had a current state process model that we built. Then we started looking at the capabilities of the tool and built a future state model and went and looked at the tools to see which ones could do it. We ended up buying the enroll tool from Access 360. And I'm like, wow, this stuff is really cool. So what did I do? I went and contacted Access 360 after spending $1 million with them. Said, can I have a job? Okay. So sure enough, they hired me. So when I got brought on board, they said, okay, come out to Irvine, California for 2 weeks. I'm here on the East Coast.
Oh, was it Irvine?
It was Irvine, yep. So they said, come out to Irvine for 2 weeks. So I jet out to Irvine, you know, have a bunch of friends out there. So I go hang out with them in the evenings. I go through training for the first week. And next thing I know, they say, go up to Ottawa. I'm like, huh? So they put me on a plane. I go by way of Seattle up to Ottawa in the middle of nowhere. Didn't really have any real dress clothes with me. You know, it was staying light until 10 o'clock at night. I was pretty disoriented and walked onto my first client site after a week of seeing the technology, getting trained on it. So yeah, kind of going from training right into the fire pit. And it was a challenging client. And then, of course, trying to get back to the East Coast from Ottawa, I think I had to take like 3 or 4 different flights. I'm like, okay, so this is what the consulting world's about. This is interesting.
Yeah. Flight delays and airport food. That's what that's what consulting's all about. And spreadsheets.
Exactly. Yeah, no kidding. So yeah, from there, picked up a couple projects locally. And then I think my next travel project was in Oklahoma City. So that was quite interesting.
Fun times.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting. And you know, I was definitely being profiled there. I had a beard at the time, and I'd go into the airport, and it's like, it was pretty funny because I was going through that airport weekly, and it was the same security people every time. And I'd go through security, they'd make me sit down, take my shoes off. And apparently, right where I was sitting, it always set off the little wand, and that's where they'd make me take my shoes off. Well, it turns out they started redoing some of the airport, and the rebar under the cement was really close to where they had the chair.
Oh.
Okay. So when they were doing the hand wand thing, it was setting it off from the rebar. There was never any metal in my shoes. It's like every single week, same guy, same process. It's like, guys, don't you get it? Let me try a different seat. Okay. It was crazy. Then I went from that and I was doing the Oklahoma City thing for a while. Then I picked up another project in Washington for a large financial kind of government-backed financial organization. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing 2 days a week in Oklahoma City, flying home for a day, then zipping down on the train down to Washington, D.C., coming back on Fridays. My kids were pretty young at the time. My wife is like, so this is what your new job like, huh? Yeah, I wasn't making a lot of friends at home at that point in time.
Yeah.
But things settled a bit, and, you know, got some local work and as well as some travel. And from there, it's just been a very interesting journey to say the least. Since then, I've been on the vendor side at Access 360. I left there, and well, we got purchased by IBM. So that was an interesting aspect in itself, because IBM bought Access 360, and they had Tivoli Identity Manager, which was really not a very good product at the time. So they bought Access 360 and turned that into Tivoli Identity Manager. And with all the features and functions, they're like, we're going to sell this. We're going to sell it like crazy. Sure enough, they sold it like crazy. Okay. Problem is, there was about a dozen of us on the services side from the Access 360 team. We were the only ones who knew how to implement. Okay. So now they turned us into a SWAT team because they put a bunch of IBM people out there doing implementations. And there was about a 75% failure rate of the implementations. So we went out as a SWAT team to fix these things. It was really interesting times.
Did you know a Russian contractor that used to work for the NSA that was doing Tivoli work back in about 2004-ish?
You'd have to say a name. I don't know.
Ah, crap. I don't remember his name. I'll have to look it up.
Ilya Medvinsky?
Yeah, I don't. What was his name?
Ilya Medvinsky?
Ilya, maybe.
Was he based out of Brooklyn?
I don't know where he was from, but he did. So in 2000, I want to say like 2004, I was working at an insurance company down on Wall Street, and they just bought Tivoli, the full Tivoli suite. And there was this Russian dude there that, no, I think he flew in because one day, because we became friends and we would start hanging out, he was telling me all about this LDAP stuff. I'm like, oh, so it's like a database. He's like, no, it is not a database. But he one day he brought his rock climbing equipment, and then we used to go rock climbing after work together at the Chelsea Piers.
Okay,
So we
interesting.
became, kind of buddy buddy that from there. And then when they left, as they installed everything, they're like, okay, now it's yours. And I was like a security analyst or something, but honestly, I was a data entry guy. Like I would fill, they'd give me stacks of paper of accounts to create, and I have to go and type in all the. And then it would then create the account across into something that then add them to databases. I effectively was the identity management tool, like before they had this stuff. And then so they got it and they're like, oh, Adam, you pick up stuff. You take this tool. You figure out this LDAP thing, this Tivoli Access Manager thing. You can do this. I'm like, okay. So that was my intro into identity management. Was it was just dumped on me because, that no one else knew what it was and they didn't have anyone else that could figure out what to do. So I wound up making a whole custom. I was actually just talking about this to a friend of mine last night. I made a whole front end in .NET that was running locally on my little server, so I could have a UI to create users and kind of automate all the tasks that I was doing. So I had to do all this data entry crap, right? But now I had to do it and enter them into LDAP and then enter them to TAM. And there was no front end. There was no UI, so I had to do everything via command line. So I
Wow.
created my own
Okay.
little front end. Well, my own little front end was awesome. It was like pentagrams spinning around and skulls on fire and lots of swear words everywhere, and
Of
because it
course
was
it was.
literally only just for me to make my life easier. Like it wasn't a tool for anyone to use. Well, then about a year later, I wound up applying for a job and I got hired into Mycroft. So when I left and I had to do my knowledge transfer, like, hey, here's all this stuff. I had to turn them over this UI and I'm like, I didn't know I was ever gonna have to give this to anybody. This is like my first real job out of college. So I handed it to them and they're like, oh my God. So, and as I found out, because I stayed friends with a couple guys there, they used that UI and shared it among the whole team. That became the official UI for like 3 years with everything. They
Wow.
didn't even remove the skulls or nothing.
Crazy.
But then that's when I got brought into Mycroft, and they're like, oh, we're gonna make you a traveling consultant. You're gonna travel all over the place. We'll pay for everything, and we're gonna give you a huge salary bump. I think huge salary bump meant I think they paid me. I don't even remember, but it was like looking back, not enough. But I think there were like 14 people or so. I think I was like employee number 14 or so. But we were up that old office up in Midtown. And then they're like, okay, here, we want you to learn this software. It was Oblix, which became Oracle Access. And
Right.
they're like, hey, we want you to learn this software because in 2 weeks you're going to be on site installing it. And I'm like, okay, no problem. Should be easy. Like next, next, next. And that's when I found out it took me 2 weeks just to get it installed. It was so painful. It never worked the same way twice. That's when I learned, like, holy shit, what did I get myself into? This stuff is horrible. It just doesn't work at all. And then I go out with their head sales guy. Me and him fly out to Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And I'm sitting in a meeting, this boardroom with all the guys of the company, this telecommunications government satellite company, where I have a guy following me everywhere I go. So as soon as I landed, I have a chaperone. When I go to the bathroom, he stands outside my stall. Like, this dude was on me. Like, nice. It was nuts. So I'm freaking out, and I got this dude over my shoulder watching everything I'm doing. But anyway, so we're in this boardroom, and the sales guy's telling everyone, oh, yeah, no problem. This is our senior engineer, Adam. You know, he's done this 20 times before. It's not a problem. He'll have this thing banged out for you. And I'm sitting there going, I've never seen this shit in my life. What are you talking about? And that's when I found out. And now I know how salespeople work. But, yeah, so I spent the whole time there, like, just with this dude over my shoulder watching me, asking me. And he's like, oh, yeah, I took the Oblix training twice. So, yeah, you know, so I'd love to learn from you. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know way more than I do. So I spent 2 weeks basically bullshit about what I was doing. I got the stuff working, but like I remember one point I called the president of Microsoft. You know, I called up John. I'm like, you have to get me out of here. I can't anymore. I don't know what I'm doing. I need help. And he's like, get on the plane tomorrow morning. I'm like, okay, cool. So I flew back. They told him, you know, hey, I had to come back to do something else for a couple days. I think Sam actually came in. Sam Tang, he came in. He helped me out. He's like, okay, look, here's what you do. Here's how you do stuff. And gave me like, you know, 3 days of like building me back up. Then they kicked my ass back onto a plane back to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I spent like the next, I think like 2 months out there getting Oblix to work in their crazy environment. Done, got it all working. But yeah, that was like my introductory to being a consultant.
That was the way the world back then too. You know, the training was limited on the products. A lot of the products really didn't work. Most of them were toolkits, glorified toolkits. I mean, it was, different world. Absolutely.
It was brutal. And then Oracle bought it. And I remember the day Oracle bought it because I just learned Oblix. I was now the Oblix guy. So I was being sent to all the Oblix installations. And then all of a sudden, Oracle bought Oblix. And they immediately, overnight, just turned off support for Oblix. So all the old tickets, even if you had open tickets, whatever, they all just got erased. Not transferred, nothing. Like I was calling, now they're like, you have to call Oracle support. So I call Oracle support. I'm like, hey, where's all my tickets I had open, like actively working on production issues as of yesterday? Gone. Like they're all gone. Like, you can't reach, you don't have access to them. Like, nope, they're all gone. You have to start over with us. And by the way, we don't know what Oblix is. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. So that's when I became the Oracle guy. And then I had OIM thrown on me. I did the first OIM installation with a guy, this new consultant that Microsoft hired that was a notorious, like, hardcore compulsive liar. Like, the dude bragged about, you know who I'm talking about. Bragged about having sports cars and all kinds of shit. He showed up one day wearing an eye patch. He's like, oh, I got in this crazy accident in the bar and my eyes all messed up. But miraculously, the next day, he was 100% perfect again. Like, the dude was weird.
I thought you were going to say the eye patch was on the other eye.
Yeah. So we got sent down to Daytona to a flight school down there. And we were told not to mention a certain New York situation the entire time we're down there. And that was the first OIM installation. And so we powered through that. That was fun. So I kept getting like handed all this like software that just didn't work. And we finally figured out how to make it work. And then it's like, okay, cool. Now you're the Oracle guy. I'm like, how come I don't get to work on the Sun products? Like, that looks so much more fun and easy. I don't understand.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting evolution. That's for sure. So what was the best part of the country you went to and how frequently, you know? I've seen more of this country doing identity management work than I ever thought possible. For instance, I never thought I'd wind up in Fargo, North Dakota. You know what I mean? Fargo, I thought, was a movie, right?
Yeah.
and very interesting place, but a lot of interesting places, right?
I got sent to all the really horrible places in the world. I got Fort Wayne, Indiana. I got some middle of nowhere upstate New York where like, let me put it like this. Everywhere I had to go, my second or third leg was always like a 12-person prop plane to get me to the little airport in the middle of nowhere. Like, right. I didn't get to go to the cool cities. I didn't get to go to Miami or get to LA or Denver. Or I didn't got nothing awesome. I got all these horrible, freezing cold up, you know, way outside Minnesota. Like, it was brutal. The only thing that was good was I got lots of points. So then I was traveling the world because it's like I come home on Thursday night and then I jump on a plane and go to Europe for like the weekend and come home and then go back to wherever the hell Texas I had to go.
That's when the points programs were meaningful, though. You could actually build up points and go places. I mean, we had guys that I worked with. You know, I had one guy that I worked with. Once a year, he'd go to Disney with his four kids and his wife, totally free of charge because of all the points he was gathering during the consulting gigs, right?
I mean,
you couldn't do that now at all.
No. You know? I mean, and that's one of those things. It's like, I'm kind of glad that I did all that traveling back in the day because I learned a lot. Like, I'm a professional traveler.
Right.
And yes. I got, you know, I scored my million miler with Delta. So now I have permanent status with them. So even now, it's like I fly. I'm treated like gold. Every time we just went up to Vermont last weekend. And we took a Delta flight, instant upgrades. They took care of all our stuff. Don't worry about the fees. They had people helping us out with everything. Like, so like that's a perk. Now I never did it with the hotels because I always got sent, like I said, to, you know, Bodunk area in Kentucky or whatever. So, oh my God, I got to tell you about Kentucky. Oh, but anyway, so I get something out of nowhere. So I'm staying at these crappy one-off motels. I didn't get the Marriotts and the Hiltons. Like those were never an option. So I remember there was one place I was doing a consulting gig. I was in a crappy ass motel in Tennessee and there was a tornado coming. So we had to we're like, where do you go? It's like one of those things you see in like the movies, just like one long row of rooms with all the exit to your car and walk out. And there's nothing around. I'm like, oh, we're all going to die. And there was one option for food and it was a KFC Taco Bell split. There was a Chinese restaurant, but everyone said, do not go to the Chinese restaurant. So like I lived on KFC and Taco Bell for like 2 months. That was exciting. Okay, so, wow. But Kentucky. So there's this dude. I had a gig at University of Louisville. And this company, they're a horrible company, but their project manager who was in charge of this thing, his name was Jeffrey Mundt. And I was out there for a couple weeks starting this project. Long story short, Jeffrey actually was a cool guy. Like, he was actually the one guy I got along with, and we hung out and bull. I was even at his house a couple times having drinks and we just, you know, hanging out, you know, because he lived in Louisville. And then the management though, like the owners of the company, whatever, they were horrible, horrible people. I mean, it was the worst people to have to deal with. And I was like, you know what? I don't need this shit. Cause I was independent at this time. I could just do whatever I wanted. So I was like, I'm out. So I just told him, I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I actually turned the gig over to, you know, our Indian friend. I gave it to him. I was like, you go do this. And he's like, okay. And he left 2 weeks later. He's like, I'm not dealing with these people either. Well, our Indian friend called me like 6 months later. He's like, dude, check this out. He sent me a link to an episode of The First 48. And I turned it on and it shows, I'm like, cool. I'm watching it. It shows the cops walk up. I'm like, and then the front door opens. I'm like, oh, we're here for a domestic dispute. And Jeffrey pops his head out. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I know that guy. Long story short, the whole thing, you know, through the episode, you can watch this on The First 48. They showed up for like domestic abuse, like someone was screaming, and I guess they called the cops, like, oh, well, so I guess Jeffrey's like boyfriend was beating him up or threatening him or something, so he called the cops, and then he's like, no, it's not a big deal. Turns out, they wound up digging up a body in the basement in a Rubbermaid container, and pulling, that's like decomposing. They show the whole thing on the show, pulling the Rubbermaid container out of the basement, and I'm like, I've been in this dude's house. Consulting can get you into weird places.
Yeah, I can't say I've run into anything quite that weird. I did get on a flight with a SEAL once, believe it or not. Not a Navy SEAL, an actual SEAL. Okay.
Like, or.
So, you know, you talked about the puddle jumpers before, you know, three flights, puddle jumper here, puddle jumper there. I was up in Maine on a project. Go to get to the airport, get on the plane. I had to fly into Boston to fly into Newark and get on the plane. And in the back of the plane, I'm sitting there and I hear, sure enough, look in the back. There's a wounded SEAL in the back that they're flying into the Boston Aquarium, but they put him on this flight, right? And it was kind of weird because, you know, I think there was probably six people on the flight. You can see everything up to the cockpit and everything.
Yeah.
But they brought the SEAL in and you know, that was the first creature off the plane. The SEAL got off first. So it was like he had all the first class amenities in this little plane. Interesting times. So, yeah, I think that's probably the strangest flight I took.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, so consulting's fun. Consulting's a good time. So nowadays, I would say the software, much better. Like, things actually work as described. You know what I think it is? Like, I think everyone trying to finally figure it out, you can't just sell an all-encompassing, we-do-everything tool. It kind of became out like kind of a niche. Like, okay, we're going to do just Federation, or we're going to do just single sign-on, or we're going to do just MFA. And then they kind of honed in on those sweet spots and made that product actually work and built out the spec for interfaces that became a more standardized approach. So nowadays, 20 years later, you know, the software is a lot better. It's a lot easier to implement. Software implementation times are way down and overall cost is way down overall. Would you think there's anything else that kind of ties into like why things are better nowadays?
Yeah, certainly. first of all, the quality of software, like you said, the focus of the software, But I think the approach of development from the get-go is different, okay? So, you know, in the early stages, they were trying to figure out what's this identity stuff really mean, and you know, it started expanding. I know when I first went to work at Tivoli, there was Tivoli Access Manager, and really that was, at the time, basically an SSO tool, a web SSO tool. Then, you know, we saw it expand into Federation. That's right around the time Ping started up, Ping Identity started up as well. So that was pretty cool to start to see that evolution into the federated world. But now I think when companies go about this approach, they know what they're going into from the beginning versus, you know, kind of building out based on what they're hearing. Obviously, they have features and functions, but I think when some of these earlier products started out, there really was no direction of where they were going. It was really evolution by almost by trial and error, right?
Yeah, and I would say too now, like you have, like before, when every time you go on site, it was, oh, well, we have this directory, this database, this directory, this PeopleSoft, this HR system. And so one of the first things was just that data consolidation. And that was a whole nightmare in itself with getting a GUID and an enterprise directory stood up. And nowadays, I feel like every time we go on site, that already exists. They already have a single user store. They already have the identity column kind of figured out. That's a huge time saver right there off the bat.
Yeah, it's funny. Early on in my career, right after I left Tivoli, I went and worked for a small company. Basically, I was running it and doing a lot of consulting. And we were working with a company that was doing kind of, I'd call it early stages of, I guess you could call it early stages of AI. So they had some pretty cool algorithms. And one of the things we started talking to them about and building out was the capability to do identity consolidation, okay? So essentially going to all these different sources, you have John Doe is John J. Doe, J. Doe, Doe, John. You know, how do you go to all these different sources and determine this is the same individual, okay? So they helped us build out this tool, leveraging their, I'll call it AI at the time, to go in and consolidate and basically take the metadata from this and consolidate it into one identity within the identity management system. So you knew you were talking about that single source once you did this. And it was interesting. You don't run into that problem anymore. I mean, there's still some data integrity issues, but nowhere near what it used to be.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned AI, because I think that's the future of where we're going to be that no one's really even tapped into. I know ForgeRock has that, they have their new AI tools that they're integrating into like their orchestration tool and into their identity suite. And it's pretty cool. You know, when we spoke with them, they were saying they were actually using the data to build their models, you know, of real life data from across their customers, but kind of anonymizing the data to train their models off of, which is pretty cool. But I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg on this stuff. I mean, with like when I see, like when I work with AI in like the crypto space and the other worlds where they're just dumping like millions or billions of dollars into AI because there's a massive financial gain, it's like seeing the growth and what it's capable of doing is just insane.
It's just right now, I don't think anyone's putting the money into the identity space because it is a niche software industry.
Yeah, it is, but it's definitely going to change the landscape, though. You know, where I see it really taking place early on is in the identity analytics right up front. Okay, where are the potential threats, all that kind of thing, and notification, pattern recognition, things along those lines, where the AI is going to be able to help monitor what's going on in the identity space and give you early warning alerts. You know, ultimately it'll go beyond that. But.
Right now, I take my code, I'll throw it, as you know, some of my like rough code, whatever, I'll throw it into ChatGPT, the new version 4, and say, hey, find known vulnerabilities or inefficiencies in this code. And it finds them, lists them, shows how to patch it, make it better. It's crazy. It, like, instantly, too. So it's like, it's like a nice sounding board to have, because like, you know, you're working on this code, it's huge. You don't know what the hell it's all doing most of half the time anymore anyway, because you've been writing it and adding to it for years. But you throw it into this thing and instantly it's like, hey, look, you're doing this here. If you change this, you have a mistake here. It's pretty crazy. And that's just the beginning. So we have like that type of tech, but it can actually just crawl your entire enterprise network and find all that stuff real time. That'll be insane. Insane.
Yeah, and there's some tools out there that are starting to do that. I've been looking at a couple of them, you know. I'm not going to mention any names right now because some of these companies are evolving. But I've seen a couple pretty sharp demos that, it's nuts.
So what do you think about Tel Aviv becoming the new Silicon Valley?
You know, it's been kind of in the making for a while, hasn't it now? You know, you've got...
I, 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 I've never said it out loud, but I think that's what's happening.
Well, absolutely. I mean, first of all, you've got people that are very well trained out of school. You know, they come out of school, they have the mandatory military. The military training that they're getting, you know, it's not just shooting guns and things like that. They've got excellent programs around security. They got excellent programs around software. So, and it's very disciplined. So these people are coming out of that whole funnel really well educated right out of their mandatory military and schooling. So,
yeah, they understand risk like nobody else.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was working at one of the big four, and the project manager who worked for me, he decided to move to Jerusalem, and big four supported him. They said, okay, you can work from there. They gave him some work. I got on a call with him, and, you know, he's standing outside. We're talking, you know, we're talking about a project or something. And all of a sudden, I hear these jets going over. And I'm like, what's going on? He said, oh, you know, this is every day. And, you know, it's fighter jets going over and shooting missiles. And it's like, what? and he was so casual about it. It's like, it was very strange. You know, that was a number of years ago. But it's definitely a different environment from what we're used to in the U.S. You know, I did have the opportunity to go to Tel Aviv a few years back to go to the headquarters of a company, a software company in the security space. And, you know, first of all, Tel Aviv is a very cool city. Okay. But above and beyond that, the amount of growth going on, the amount of construction going on, and the amount of tech companies there was just astounding. Yeah. So I can't even imagine where it is today. Interestingly enough, I was there and gosh, 21 years ago, I was working with a company called Eurekify. And Eurekify was really one of the first RBAC tools where it would pull information in and help you create roles for, you know, an RBAC model. And then you take that and you put it in your identity management system. So one of the founders of, well, the two founders of Eurekify were based out of Tel Aviv. One of them stayed there, one of them's here in the US. And while I was in Tel Aviv, I'm like, let me check if Ron's around. Well, sure enough, I found him, and he was about two blocks away from the building I was in. I hadn't seen this guy in probably 18 years. Call him up, okay? Walk two blocks up. Here he is involved in another API security company. It was his third startup, okay? And, you know, we just talked about the evolution, but, you know, I thought it was very interesting that after that much time, you know, he remembered me, obviously, because we worked very closely together, but, you know, here he is in this tech capital, just growing yet another company that he sold off. So he sold off three companies. I think maybe this was his third or his fourth. But the opportunity there is incredible. And, you know, you see a lot of movement of people from one company to another. So the talent that is coming out of Tel Aviv, skills that they have, are just amazing.
Yeah. And I think the Pegasus app came out of Tel Aviv as well, or Israel in general. I'm not sure Tel Aviv, but... I think you know about the Pegasus app that's used to break into cell phones? Oh, well, we don't have to go to that. That's a totally different topic. That'd be a great topic to talk about later, though. But speaking of later, so I want to introduce something now. Since this is our first interview, so I'm going to put you on the spot. And, well, I don't know, let's call it the Nidus Anarchy Challenge. I want you to name three people that you challenge to come on to this interview and be an interview with us or me or whatever on the next podcast. So who are three people that you want to call out that need to be on this series and interview on the Nidus Anarchy series?
Well, first and foremost, one that comes to mind immediately is somebody that both you and I work with, albeit at different times, same company, different time. Okay. Sam Tang, come on out.
I agree. We have to get Sam.
Okay. That's one.
Sam, I'll come to the golf course. We'll do it there if you want.
Oh boy. All right, let's see. Number two.
As you can tell, I definitely put spot.
Yeah, you know,
this is not planned at all.
Actually, I think what the guys over at One Cosmos are doing is pretty cool. And I'd really like to see you and Mike Engel talk about, you know, really the whole password list, the blockchain, all that kind of stuff. So I think Mike Engel's number two.
Yeah, I'd love to see what they're doing with Europe now that we learned, like, you know, they really don't know what passwordless is there. Like, so that seems like a prime market for them. Or is it a struggle because they don't know what it is? Now they're at the education level. That'd be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, that was certainly interesting. Well, we were in Europe, I don't know, what, a month ago? It was interesting that we found out there that, you know, passwordless really wasn't a thing there yet. And, You know, some of the companies we were talking to, they were just getting started with real MFA. That was pretty interesting.
Yep.
Let's see. I've got a third one to come up with, don't I?
Yeah, number three.
Oh, boy. This is a challenge. Huh.
You're setting the precedent. Now everyone else will know that I'm going to ask them this at the end of every interview, but you're the first one, so I'm putting you on spot.
You know who would be interesting is interesting to bring on is Eric Leach. Okay.
Okay.
Eric was one of the co-founders of Strata. He came from back in the day at Oracle, and you know he's been on the product management side for a long time. So I think he'd be a very interesting person to have.
Yeah, he's a smart dude.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'd like to pick his brain for sure.
Yep. So those cool. Are my initial three.
Okay, so Sam, Mike, Eric, you've all been challenged to come hang out. So that'll be awesome. Hopefully we'll see you guys on here soon. Everyone else, I want to say thanks. You can follow us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all the social medias, Nydis, I-A-M, N-Y-E-D-I-S-I-A-M. You can email me, adam@nydis.com. You can email ted@nydis.com anytime you want. Any questions, please feel free to leave a comment below.
You can also hit us up directly if you want to be on this interview, even though you weren't directly called out.
Hit us up. We'd love to talk to you. We'll talk to you guys around later.